Health, Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:08 p.m. Today's Tuesday, February 20th. We're in Capitol Room 106. Members present at this time, Representative David Eastman, Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard, Representative Jennifer Johnston, alternate Representative Matt Clayman, Vice Chair Representative Bryce Edgman, and myself, Representative Tarr, serving as the acting chair today to help out Representative Sponholz, who will be back shortly, and so we'll look forward to that. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. If we could please ask folks to please silence their cell phones at this time. Before we begin, want to extend a thanks to Butch Carber, the House Health and Social Services Secretary from Records, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO. Thank you to both of you for staffing our meeting today. Today we're going to be hearing just one bill, House Bill 162, from the governor, and this is dealing with the Department of Health and Social Services background check process. We have heard this bill before, and so today I think the plan is to take up a committee substitute and consider that committee substitute, and pending any objection, try to move that bill out of committee. So we'll be hearing from the Department of Law, taking public testimony, discussing any amendments, and then, of course, again, look to the will of the committee. So could Ms. Stacy Crayley please come forward, Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Law. And before we begin, we're going to ask for a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
Madam Chair, I move that the Health and Social Services Committee adopt the blank committee substitute for House Bill 162, work order number 30-GH1676/J. It's a working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. So, Ms. Crayley, if you could please put yourself on the record, your name and affiliation, and then walk us through the bill and the changes in the CS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Stacy Crayley, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. I want to thank the committee for hearing House Bill 162, and would like to walk through a summary of the changes in the version J committee substitute. Just as a predicate, let me tell you that we've had a number of informal meetings with the Ombudsman's office. If you recall from our previous hearing, the Ombudsman had indicated there were a couple of issues she had with the bill, and had had a couple of suggestions, and we indicated we wanted to work with her to come back to the committee with a better bill, and I think we've done that. We met with staff of this committee, and also with the Ombudsman's office, and collectively with Legislative Legal, and I believe we have come back with a much improved bill. So with that, I'll explain what the changes are, and if there's any questions, please let me know. Beginning with Section 1, if you recall from our previous meeting, the Department of Public Safety needed a minor amendment to the bill in order to allow for the sharing of criminal background check stuff histories with respect to FBI federal laws. So Section 1 contains the amendment requested by the Department of Public Safety to ensure compliance with federal law relating to the sharing of criminal history information with the Department of Health and Social Services for purposes of licensing. Section 2 contains a technical fix that removes the word registry and instead refers to databases to avoid the concern raised by the Ombudsman's office regarding confusion over the term registry. Old Section 7 was deleted from the original bill. As it was determined in consultation with Legislative Legal that the section was redundant. It was determined that keeping what is now in the committee substitute is now in Section 7 is sufficient to address the issue of providing for background checks for relative placements in foster care. Section 10 is kind of the major part of the revision here, and there was substantially rewritten to address the concerns raised by the Ombudsman's office. Specifically, this section is rewritten to do the following. It removes confusion caused by using the word registry and changes that word to databases. It clarifies that we are looking to evaluate health, safety, and welfare issues when reviewing databases related to licensed entities and not just looking at technical violations that may lead to non-renewal, suspension, or revocation of a license. So we want to be clear that we're not looking for a technical violation as a civil history bar, but something that's more significant. It also clarifies that we are looking to identify persons whose children are subjects of a child in need of aid petition. Also clarifies that we are looking to the health, safety, and welfare issues when reviewing databases related to those individuals who have governed under occupational licensing, Title 8 of the Alaska statutes, and also not looking to kind of technical violations as being bars to participation. And finally, it adds that a person who works for the state, not just the Department of Health and Social Services, is subject to a barring condition if they are terminated from employment for a substantiated allegation of assaultive, neglectful, or exploitive behavior. Again, all of those suggestions were at the recommendation of the Ombudsman's Office. Section 12 is amended as requested again by the Ombudsman's Office to clarify persons who are seeking a variance will have access to the necessary information if they desire to pursue a variance. Section 14 adds a new section under 4710 to effectuate the sharing of information for purposes of the variance committee. Section 17, formerly Section 16, contains the technical fix that removes the word registry and replaces it with the word database. Section 19 removes the qualifier of unsupervised in this section before the word volunteer as to persons who can be investigated. This is something that legislative legal came, actually something that the Department of Health and Social Services notified or identified in reviewing the bill. We're going to make sure that we're investigating all volunteers, not just those who are supervised, but those who are unsupervised. So we took out the qualifier. Section 20 is added to this committee substitute to amend 4732.120. This was an omission in the original bill, and it was a reference to the registry in that section, so we've added this to the bill, removed the word registry, and added the word database. And finally, Section 22 is amended to add a new subsection to clarify that information can be shared with law enforcement for when dealing with concurrent investigations, to make sure that that's a nice, tidy package of information as opposed to all historical information being shared with law enforcement. And those are the changes to the bill and the committee substitute.
Thank you, Ms. Fraley. Are there questions? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, now on Section 22, speaking of concurrent investigations, what would be the status of the department's ability to share information with law enforcement if it wasn't yet a concurrent investigation? Say the department, thought maybe it should become a concurrent investigation, or maybe law enforcement was considering starting an investigation, would they be able to share that information?
Through the Chair, Representative Eastman, under the current statutory scheme, in order for us to share any information with law enforcement that is of a confidential nature, we must have a search warrant or a court order. A search warrant signed by a judge, not a subpoena. So we would need that. As this is being contemplated, as this amendment is being contemplated, what we're looking at is that when there is a criminal offense or a criminal allegation in a licensed facility and there is a concurrent at the same time, the police are called and licensing is called, and that those two agencies intersect at the same time on a report of harm or a report or an allegation of harm in a licensed facility, that's what we're talking about in terms of concurrent investigations. There, I don't believe that there would be a way for the department or law enforcement to kind of say, unless an event turned into where there was an allegation and licensing went out and then they made a report to the police because they thought there was a crime that had been committed, that would create a concurrent investigation. But you wouldn't be able to take an event from 5, 6, 7 months ago on a completely different allegation and turn it into a concurrent investigation. Does that answer your question?
Follow-up? Mm-hmm. Also through the Chair. So if you receive a call, let's say you're the department, and you think that this call sounds like it might also possibly become a concurrent investigation, is there anything to keep the department from reaching out to law enforcement at that point and say, hey, we just got this information, wanted you to be aware of that?
Through the Chair, Representative Eastman, I believe that if the department was under the impression that a crime had been committed and felt that a report to law enforcement should be made, be that the state troopers, local police, or the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, there would be nothing precluding them from making that report.
Can I follow up?
Please continue.
Thank you. So could you just help me understand at what point does something become an investigation from that, from the standpoint of this bill? Is there a particular benchmark at which something goes from a you know, possible investigation to an actual investigation?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, so the department would receive can receive a multitude of different calls or reports, be that through an email or a telephone call or in-person allegation that something has happened in a licensed facility. At that point, the department goes through a qualitative evaluation of the report to determine whether or not there's, you know, a without getting too legalese here or too into the weeds, you know, some sort of like reasonable suspicion or probable cause that something requires an investigation. Not all reports that come in require an investigation. So there is a qualitative evaluation to determine whether or not the allegation is of such a serious nature or a significant nature or of a concern that somebody needs to go out and evaluate it at that point. And as soon as that happens, then that could trigger an investigation. It could trigger, once they go out to the home or to a foster home, they determine that, oh, it turns out that this really wasn't a big issue. It was more of, you know, sour grapes or something, and the case can be closed. So there would be a formal process where then the agency would then inform the license provider that they were, in fact, investigating an allegation and would ask for records, would want to look at documents, would want to interview people and that sort of thing. So there would be a threshold trigger of saying we're investigating and we're moving forward on this allegation.
Thank you.
Other questions? I have a question, Ms. Crayley. Mm-hmm. I just want to understand, in the previous version, there was the civil registry and then there was the centralized registry. In the CS, the centralized registry has become the civil history database.
Correct.
And then I'm just trying to match up where the civil registry, I didn't see that exactly, but what I did see now is in the new one, child protection instead of central registry. So I was missing the sort of the database, registry to database change.
Correct. So through the chair, yes, this is why this got a little confusing. So under the original bill, we had identified a civil registry, which was going to be the civil history part of the criminal background check.
Okay.
Then there was also the centralized registry, which existed in state law, and that is the database that is managed by the Office of Children's Services. Keeps track of all of their reports of harm, protective services reports that identify when an event has happened. So because they both use that word registry, we wanted to change that. And we thought it was more effective to call the OCS database the child protection database, so that you really kind of understood who was operating it and what sort of information would be contained within that. So we renamed it to the Child Protection Database. We then used the word civil registry in the new version, and that was an issue that the ombudsman raised, which said, well, you're still talking about registries, and it sounds like you're creating a registry when in fact we're not. So we went back and identified that what we're looking is we've identified civil databases that we are going to identify through statute and regulation that we will review. And so that's how we kind of cleaned up the confusion.
And so then civil databases will be kind of like the umbrella term for any of these various places you're going to look?
Correct.
Okay.
Through the chair, correct.
On page 10, what was throwing me off, and this is in the CS, section 15, it still talks about a child protection registry. And the department shall maintain a child protection registry.
Right, and so that's one of the registries we're going to look at.
Okay,
that's one of the databases we're going to look at.
Okay,
so child protection registry is one of the databases we're going to review for purposes of our civil history database check.
Okay, perfect. That makes sense to me. Any other questions? Okay, I will remove my objection to adopting the CS. Are there any other objections to adopting the CS? Okay. Seeing none, the work draft then is 30-GH1676-J, and so that will be the one we're working from now. We're going to open up the bill for public testimony at this time. It looks like we have one individual here and a couple folks, and so if these folks want to testify, just let me know. We have one individual It looks like wants to testify. And then we also have Ms. Brody from the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Healthcare Services, and Catherine Monfreda from Department of Public Safety. And so I'm thinking both of those folks are probably online for questions, as well as the ombudsman and here as well. So we have those resources available. But for the public testimony, is Mr. Thomas Garber available?
Yes, this is Thomas Garber.
Hi there. Please state your name for the record and affiliation, and provide your testimony.
My name is Thomas Garber, private citizen. I forwarded a letter, or actually three documents. One is a particular letter that's from Andrew Hemingway. He was an administrative law judge that handled my appeal from a substantiated abuse charge from the Office of Children's Services. The original substantiation was made in March of 2011. During the propensity of the hearing, I asked for subpoenas to get records from Central Peninsula Hospital and North Star Behavioral Health, as well as a couple other subpoenas. Mr. Hemingway questioned his authority to issue subpoenas, and I asked him to verify that. And about 2 months later, he came back and he gave me the subpoenas. I had them properly served on both the hospitals. Central Peninsula Hospital declined the subpoena and provided me a letter specifically explaining why it did not meet federal HIPAA protection rules. North Star honored the records request and sent them directly to the judge. The judge reviewed them and then released them to both me and the Attorney General under a protective order. Then just before we were to go to hearing, he comes back and says, oops, I screwed up. I don't have the authority to issue subpoenas, so I'm not going to issue one for your son, who was an adult by then. And so I couldn't get the records or the witnesses to appear and defend or, prove or disprove my guilt and the substantiated charges, which, my name has been placed on his registry, but I have not been able to clear my name or to challenge OCS's findings. After that, I filed a grievance against Mr. Hemingway, and this letter is addressed to David Jones, Senior Assistant Attorney General, and in this letter he explains why he did what he did. He explains the Alaska Administrative Law Code or whatever. And then at the bottom, he says that he discussed my request with Chief Administrative Law Judge Chris Kennedy and his coworkers, and nobody could definitively determine his authority to issue the subpoenas. After that, I filed a grievance against him, and with Kathleen Fredrickson's help, I got this letter, and then also I've been in contact with her to try to make changes to the fact that, rather administrative law judges have authority to issue subpoenas for records and witnesses. And I'd like to point out that she published her 14th annual report on January 31st, and in that report, she requests on page 15 that subpoena authority be given to the administrative law judges so that, an individual in my position can challenge the OCS's substantiated charges. I also like to point out that the Citizens Review Panel, in their report last June or July when it was published, that Tammy Wilson called for a grand jury investigation of OCS back in 2015. And the grand jury came back, or the judge came back and said that the best place for that investigation was either in the Citizen View Panel or the Ombudsman. The Citizen View Panel said in their report that they have been closed out of the Federal Child and Family Services a review and was not made a party to the review process. And the Ombudsman has reported also that they have been their reports or their efforts to make some changes with OCS have been have not been processed through the legislature. Anyway, I approve of, or I would like the registry. You know, I don't. I'm sorry. I'm having a little frustration trying to get my point out. But the registry is necessary. But what really concerns me is that the due process and civil rights are not being protected. In the forefront to guarantee that you can protect your rights and to be able to maintain a normal to be a normal citizen. Mm-hmm. So I would like the committee to recognize that both the Ombudsman, the Citizen View Panel, and Tammy Wilson had all called for changes to the laws to try to protect our constitutional rights to civil liberties and due process. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like to push the administrative law judges to have authority to issue subpoenas during a substantiated child abuse or neglect hearing.
Okay.
I guess that's all I can say at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Garber. We appreciate your testimony. Is there any questions for the gentleman? Okay, we don't have any questions, so we appreciate your testimony today. Is there anyone here in the room that would like to testify? Okay. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the public testimony. That brings us to amendments. Any amendments? I don't believe there are amendments. Are there any points of discussion from the committee? Any comments? All right, no comments. Then I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill 162, Work Order 30-GH1676/J from committee with individual recommendations and attached to a fiscal note.
Any objection? Okay. Seeing none, HB 162 passes from committee. So we will go ahead and adjourn the House Health and Social Services Committee, standing committee portion of this meeting, but please stand by at 3:45. We do have the budget subcommittee with amendments preparing for closeout. So with that, we'll gavel out, but please sign the paperwork and stand by for the budget subcommittee. Thank you.